The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The information and ideas provided within this show are intended for educational purposes only and not intended as investment advice. The hosts of this show do not provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your tax or legal professional regarding your individual situation. No information should be interpreted as securities advice. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, and investment professionals. While we have endeavored to ensure the accuracy of the information in this program, we do not guarantee or give any warranty as to the accuracy, timeliness, or completeness of any information. The process of buying and selling a business can be frightening for the parties involved. What paperwork is needed? What is the true market value of the business? How do you know what transactions are required to be processed in addition to the sale of the business? Welcome to Biz Broker Talk, where you'll find the answers to these questions and much more. Your hosts, Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding, have a decade of experience providing business broker services to large and small businesses. Today, they're ready to help you. Here's Robert and Doug.
Welcome to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and
Doug Scheiding.
We're business brokers of San Antonio. We're also operate equipment appraisers of San Antonio. Please email any questions for today's show to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. That's bizbrokertalk.com. Or visit us at www.bizbrokertalk.com. Today's show, we're going to discuss the 10-step sales process, starting with planning and ends with the closing. We're going to discuss how to choose a broker and also comment on finding a business. Answers some of the questions that have been emailed in and discuss an upcoming show. But first, I think it's probably best we start talking about a few closings we just had as a demonstration of how diverse small business transactions are. We had two closings in the last week, one of which was a promotional company. The buyer was a corporate buyer. It was a family-owned business, and both the sellers are staying on with a new organization, with one of the sellers just having a kind of a workout period for about 6 months and then moving on to another business that that started. Some of the interesting aspects of it was the key to the deal was really the training and transition that the sellers are going to provide the buyers. And the buyer's interest was really buying a market share. They were buying from one city, buying into a market of another city.
And that's kind of unique in terms of someone within the industry buying a business and paying, you know, fair market value for, mm-hmm. for the business, because typically that's not
That's a distress sale, typically.
Yeah, and it seems to be common. You know, this is a promotional type company. We also had a print shop last fall that was kind of the same, where some of these larger organizations are basically amassing more revenue by buying some of the smaller businesses that are out there.
And there's some discounting going on by that revenue.
Yeah, exactly.
And Doug, you had a closing on an internet retailer.
It's always good when we have two closings in a week. I wish I could say that every week. But yeah, it was an internet retailer. And we've sold internet retailers before. But this one was particularly popular, sold within less than 2 months, which unfortunately I don't have the record because Frank still has the record of the 28 days. But this one was 58 days. So in my case, the seller was retiring, which is always a good reason. In the end, it was listed for about 3 weeks, and we had three offers within 2 days, and that may seem like a good thing, but sometimes it's complex managing the expectations of the seller, our client, as well as the buyers that are coming in, because the ones that don't get chosen, and this is not a used car type transaction where you're playing one buyer off the other. I always encourage the buyers to make their best offer. especially in a situation like that where we know and we're expecting multiple offers at the same time. So,
you know, two offers are ever the same. Meaning, it's the terms of the transaction, not necessarily. If you have two offers for $500,000, it's the terms of it. Is the seller carrying a note? How long is the seller needing to stay on? I mean, there's all sorts of aspects that the character of the buyer can affect the deal too.
Exactly, and in this particular case, because it was an internet business, it was relocatable. It was somewhat regional to the South Central U.S., but it could have been operated from other parts of the country, and so in that actually also came into the decision process of the seller is just trying to decide which buyer he was going to go with in terms of. So it's not all about the money, as you say, you know, on occasion, but there's other factors to consider. The buyer wound up being a corporate refugee.
Typical for us. Typical for our lower middle markets, a corporate refugee.
Exactly. It's a lifestyle.
He put in his notice. It made the offer the same day?
It was about a week or two after that. But, yeah, he was putting in his notice because he wanted to get the proper 2 weeks before the closing. And in the end, we still had a few hurdles to overcome. In particular, the non-compete was kind of tough because the seller, while he had no plans of basically starting up a new website to sell and offer retail type offerings, he did want to at least remain in the industry and create some of the things that could be sold over the internet. And so determining a geography and basically the terms of that went back and forth, and both sides had an attorney, and they went back and forth after the original version one document came out, and basically the buyer and seller had to get together to kind of work out the non-compete.
Yeah, it's not always productive when the attorneys get involved now, is it?
Well, but both,
it can be.
Yeah, it can be. And it's certainly a better situation if both sides have an attorney, in my opinion, because if just the buyer lawyers up and the seller doesn't want to spend the money for an attorney, that's not an equitable situation.
No.
Certainly because if you're dealing with a broker, that broker shouldn't be giving legal advice or, you know, CPA advice, et cetera. So a lot of times we do provide advice or maybe opinion is the better word to the seller, but certainly not legal advice. But the good news on that one is that the landlord was no problem. I mean, we've had many problems last year with landlords and where landlords kill deals. They don't approve the buyer. They believe that the seller that they have in place was
better. They won't release the seller from the terms of
right,
the lease.
Right. So, yeah, that's always the thing. So
today we're going to talk about an example 10-step process. This is fairly common in the lower middle market of how a business is typically sold. So let's kind of review those steps, and then we're going to get to each one of those steps in more detail. The number one is to plan and prepare. You have to understand what those tax consequences are. So planning, we can't emphasize how early you can start planning. We like to work with sellers 1 to 3 years before the business actually goes on the market. The second step is retaining a broker. We're going to spend quite a bit of time talking about that.
A lot of time.
We're going to talk about the need for third-party valuations, when it's needed and when it's not. The fourth step would be creating your marketing documents. Fifth step is actually implementing your marketing strategy, followed by contacting those prospective buyers. Then we talk about the seventh one, which is a term sheet or an LOI or an offer to purchase.
Offer to purchase.
And then how the due diligence process works. And then documentation preparation, dealing with, you know, the documents for closing, as well as landlords and franchisors.
And lenders
as applicable. And then finally, the closing. So let's begin by talking about planning and preparing for those tax consequences. I think that the first thing we need to go back to several shows and kind of talk about having accurate financial and timely financial records is paramount to being able to sell a business, because any buyer is going to want to look at that as well as their lender that may be involved. So the first step in preparing a business for sale is making sure you've filed your last 3 years' tax returns and that you have your current financials, at least the last quarter, up to date. That's your profit and loss statement as well as your balance sheet.
And I think from the standpoint of getting in the habit, because as the business is marketed, the buyers are always going to want to know, well, how'd they do last month in terms of revenue? How'd they do last quarter in terms of revenue? So,
and they're going to look at period over period as well.
Right.
How did they do through June of last year? Since I've got records through June of this year, how does it look period over period? They're going to want to have that too. So you need to be prepared to generate financials. You're going to be doing things in the selling process that you're never going to do have in a startup to the operation of your business for the last 20 years, and you'll never do it again. You'll be doing activities that are going to irritate you and may make no sense, but there's a reason for it, and usually it's validation of what's been represented and for the buyer's lending.
Well, as you always say, the seller is always going to learn more about their business than they ever thought they would during the sales process.
That's correct. Learn more about it than...
That becomes true almost every time. So, and from the financial standpoint, get your CPA keyed in if you've got a CPA that's preparing those documents, because part of the plan to prepare is, as part of that process, is understanding your tax consequences. Assuming you did get an offer at a certain price, you need to know what you're going to take home.
So let's use three very specific examples. You sell your business for $1 million, it's all cash at closing. You sell your business for $1 million, 90% of it is cash at closing, 10% of it's in a seller note. You're carrying a note for, let's say, 3 to 5 years at, you know, nominal interest rate. Third scenario is you sell your business for 70% cash at closing, you carry a 30% note. Each one of these three scenarios can have tax implications, which is one of the basic things you need to talk to your financial advisor about, your tax advisor about. How does this affect me if I'm having income from the sale in future years? Does it affect me or doesn't it? And if so, I need to know as a seller how it affects me to help structure the sale, how you're going to represent a market. The other thing you need to talk about is your equipment. Your furniture, fixtures, and equipment, they need to be clean, they need to be repaired, because one of the things you're going to sign at closing is that all of your equipment is in good working order. One of the things I want to talk about in regards to the equipment is, if you have obsolete equipment, get it out of there. Liquidate it, sell it, both physically, tangibly on your facility and in your balance sheet. It does you no good to have obsolete equipment on your balance sheet and on the floor, because a buyer is going to discount it, and that view is going to be across all of your assets. If you've got $100,000 of equipment in your machine shop and half of that stuff is obsolete and you haven't used it in 5 years, you're not doing yourselves any favor at all. Liquidate it. If you can't sell it, get it to scrap value and get it off your books and get the pocket.
Yeah, because when the buyer comes in and does a tour of the facility, they'll see that equipment and it just won't, from a curb appeal, it won't have an appeal. The corollary to that is inventory. The same thing.
Yep.
Get the old inventory out of there. If it's obsolete, do it on a yearly basis. Certainly, here in Texas, we don't want to pay business personal property tax on it, so we get taxed on whatever inventory we have. But the buyer is going to discount that as well as they go through the process. And when you market the business, be conservative, because typically some inventory is going to come and transfer with the business. But don't be overly aggressive. Inventory is always at cost. It's not the retail, but it's at cost that it's going to transfer. And just put an average value of what you typically have on hand, because whatever offer you get, it's going to say it's going to include so much inventory.
That's correct. The next step is retaining gathering your team of advisors. So, you know, if you're going to use a business broker, we'll talk about that next. You can interview them. You need to talk to a financial advisor. If you've been doing your own taxes or Cousin Ed's been doing your taxes, find a certified public accountant that is versed and has experience and transactional experience of selling small businesses, that they understand the tax implication and what's necessary for the sale. and potentially talk to a transactional attorney. Just because your sister is a labor law attorney or cousin's
your sister's brother-in-law, friend,
is a criminal attorney is not the same. Yeah, they teach it in law school, but you need someone that's versed in practices transactional law to be able to understand what the aspects of the deal is going to impact you. So let's move on to retaining a business broker. We suggest that you interview business brokers in your area. They need to be fairly close by, because if you're going to have meetings, you need to have someone that's close by to visit with. There's a lot of firms that try to advertise nationally, and we warn people about dealing with those types of firms. We've not seen those as being that fruitful in the actual sale of the business.
Yeah, and you know, they'll, as any small business owner, you'll get the faxes that come across the fax machine. Hey, I've got buyers for your business, et cetera. It sounds great, but my advice is be wary of those sorts of things. Even here where we are, we get brokers from out of state, out of the area, New York, Chicago, and they offer discount fees and get people signed up. And what happens when, there's a face-to-face meeting, and which is where the deal is actually made or lost, they can't be there. So it's a very regional type of business, and so your broker needs to be local.
Yeah, we strongly recommend having a local broker. Then the next aspect of it is, does the broker charge an upfront fee? There can be reasons why a broker should charge upfront fee. Some brokers charge it just as a barrier of entry or a hurdle to make sure that they're not dealing with someone that's not serious about dealing with their business. That's understandable as long as it's a nominal fee. Some of them want to recoup the amount of money they're going to spend on the basic marketing of the business. But generally, the times that we charge an upfront fee is if you're wanting a short listing. In other words, it's not going to be for a year. It's going to only have 90 days to sell the business. So we've got to have it sold in 6 months. It's kind of tough to do. There's less likely we're going to be able to get that business done in a really short, sold in a very short period. And also, we need to, think about any extraordinary expenses, such as if it's a unique business that needs to be marketed outside of the normal brokerage community. Those are things that need to be reviewed. You need to understand that business brokerage is similar to real estate, but it's also a lot different. Some states, I believe there's 11 states that require licensing through their real estate entities, state regulating boards, for business brokerage. But generally speaking, there is not a co-brokering environment, because the seller contract with the broker would mean that the buyer's agent would be actually representing the seller, because they're co-brokering that listing.
Yeah, that's a hot topic for me, and we could talk for a long time on that. But it's very different than real estate, and typically there's only one broker involved. If you're a buyer of a business, you typically do not need a broker as part of the transaction, but you do need your own CPA and your own attorney from an advisor standpoint. So
you need to understand the broker's invested in the transaction, because they don't get paid unless the deal closes. And also, they represent the seller, but they're not against the buyer. But they need to make sure the deal works. So sourcing funding and advisors for the buyer is not uncommon in our industry. We're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to finish discussing choosing a broker and review the remaining 8 items on a typical business transaction.
Comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings.
While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, they have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit BizBrokerTalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at bbofsa.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at eaofsa.com.
Tune in for What About Wealth every week to learn the vital answers to your questions about creating wealth, investing it, donating it, and protecting it. Your hosts are Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee, who explain the principles that govern wealth in terms you can understand. Building and preserving positive wealth requires correct action, but few people know how wealth really works. Listen every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and find the answers you need about wealth.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
This is Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast at bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells.
And Doug Scheiding.
We're discussing the 10 primary steps in the sale of a business. We're on step two, discussing choosing a broker. I think one of the things that we need to let a potential seller know is that you need to choose a broker you can trust, because that broker typically has handled hundreds of transactions. And although no two transactions are the same, the process is usually very similar, and that you've got to realize that broker is usually speaking from experience.
And the buyer needs to realize that as well. So as you were mentioning, in terms of, we're not against the buyer, but yes, certainly we're motivated to get the transaction closed, because we don't make a commission unless it does, but that's to the benefit of both parties. It's going to be a win-win situation.
Yeah, you never want to have either party leveraged, but that's for another time. And watch out for the faxes and letters, especially when they say we have a buyer or they want a high dollar, $10,000, $50,000 business valuation to start the process. If you get a letter, it's usually handwritten or it's personally signed. It's from a local broker. Those are the kind of things that you should pay attention to. And it's usually the owner's largest asset, so it's not uncommon for a seller to want to know periodically, every 3 to 5 years, talk to brokers and just kind of have an understanding of what the market is for their business.
Well, I think what the statistic is that at any time, 10 to 20% of business owners are, you know, contemplating the sale of their business. So, licensing and certifications. We strongly recommend that you hire a broker that is certified. There's state certifications, but we attest to IBBA, the International Business Brokers Association, and the CBI, or what's called the Certified Business Intermediary certification. So that's something that you should look for in a broker.
And if you're in a licensing state, look at the licensing and the different licensings that are available and applicable to business brokers to make sure that you're not just dealing with a commercial realtor, but you're dealing with someone that is certified in their profession. Also, you need to understand who holds escrow.
That's important, because if your broker or the broker you're interviewing says that they hold escrow, my advice is run the other way and go to the next door.
Yeah. Either the buyer's attorney or seller's attorney or an escrow company that handles business transactions should handle the escrow. We see that the complaints from the state where, and what, where lawsuits happen, is almost, I'm going to say it's virtually 8 out of 9 times there's ever escrow issues.
No, exactly. I mean, a couple of years ago, we had heard about a broker that was almost doing like a Ponzi scheme. He was taking a low escrow, and typically in a business transaction, different than real estate, it's a sizable amount. It's $10,000 and above.
Can be 10% of the transaction.
10% of the overall transaction or offer price. And he was asking for small, you know, $5,000 type escrows, and basically he was just using that in his own personal account to, allegedly. But
and also along with that is talking about the office. We have a boutique office. We have 4 certified brokers in our office. There's majority of business brokers are single office practitioners. I'm sure there's a lot of good ones out there, but the issue that Doug says from time to time is that, you know, when they go on vacation, so does your business.
Absolutely. So if they go to Italy, your business just did as well. conversely, is the broker is the first impression of your business. So I think you need to be mindful of that, because even though the broker is quote-unquote making representations about their business, their business acumen reflects on you.
True. You know, and also that you need to be interviewing that broker. It's just like a interviewing for an employee. You need to choose someone that you're comfortable with, because you're going to essentially be married for up to a year or whatever your listing agreement is with them, and understand what their approach is. Is it someone that's just going to throw your deal up against the wall and see if it sticks out there and you get traction, or do they have a selective approach? Are they, you know, very clinical in how they approach the sale of your business?
Absolutely, because if a broker in the first meeting wants you to sign the contract, again, my first opinion is that that's probably not the broker that you want to sign up with, because they're the more of the throw it on the wall, sign up. Oh, you want $1 million for your business?
Absolutely.
We always want $1 million. So I think that, you know, you should take caution in that and basically get to know the broker, and they should get to know your business to be able to give you the most probable sales price, as well as to see if it's a good assignment for them.
Yeah, we won't list a business until the seller knows what their tax implications are, which is pretty far down the road. You also understand what the upfront fees and any commission rates are, and whether those are negotiable. And are you comfortable with them? I mean, I guess that's the biggest issue that we stated earlier is, you know, you've got to have a comfort level and a trust there, and understand that they've worked with similar type transactions before.
And you can ask the broker in terms of, you know, this 10-step process that we're going through is one that we developed, giving our engineering type background. We're very process oriented, but there is a process to selling a business, and you need to ask the broker what their success rate is. I mean, again, the throw it on the wall approach, you know, did they close 1 in 10, or, you know, is it more like 50-75%? I like to call the time period after you sign the listing agreement the honeymoon period. That is always the happiest day of the sales process for the seller and broker, is when you sign the listing, everything's great, and then that's when the work begins in terms of you know, gathering some of the additional information, creating the marketing documents, etc. But until the closing, That's when the next happy time is. So,
right, and then there's also the main issue that we revolve around here is the confidentiality of the business transaction. We don't co-broker and we don't do dual agency. If a broker has a buyer, they can represent the buyer, but they're not going to be on the seller side of the fence. Confidentiality is a cornerstone of our business, and there's too much a chance of irreparable harm happen to the client or client the seller.
Absolutely, and that's another reason why we don't co-broker, is due to the confidentiality of the transaction, because you don't want your employees to know, you don't want to have them to leave, you don't want to have to retrain them, you don't want your customers to know, and landlord, and it just goes on down the list. So
the third step in the process of selling a business is evaluation. We rarely recommend evaluation, and we'll tell you, we'll talk a little about when you would want evaluation. The number one reason you want evaluation is if you don't believe the broker or it's a complex business transaction where you're going to need evaluation. The other reasons can be there are multiple parties that are owners of the business, and they want affirmation from a third party arm's length that's not going to benefit from the sale, what the value of the business is. It can be due to a partnership breakup, divorce, IRS needs, and there's a lot of reasons why you'd want a business valuation in conjunction with a sale. But you need to understand the valuation techniques.
Yeah, there's three approaches to the valuation, and actually our episode next week we'll get into this in great detail, and then there's methodologies in each of those approaches. But
it's very similar to real estate. It's also the same, similar approaches to real estate and machinery equipment appraisal.
Yeah, it's an asset approach, income approach, or market approach. But you need to have a third party do the valuation. And we're talking both business valuations and equipment appraisals. So they're both needed in some instances. But I think if the larger the business, the more applicable it is having a business valuation. So, we're typically talking
$1 million transaction and greater.
$1 million and above. So, most business brokers, the average sales price is about $300,000 for, that's what's called Main Street. Mm-hmm. And typically in those, it's not cost effective or you probably don't need to.
Plus, there's so much data out there on most small business transactions from the sources that we brokers use. There's three main databases that we access for market comparables. So if you've got a tire store or a beauty salon or common business, there's so many transactions out there that there's really not a need for a business valuation.
Yeah, unless there's some unique aspect to it,
but it does help determine the asking price.
It does. And if there's lending involved, they're going to have to get their own valuation as well.
And they're not assignable. Especially with SBA, you're not going to be able to directly assign it unless you've prearranged that with a lending source.
Right. So if you're a seller and you get a business valuation, hopefully from someone other than your CPA, the buyer can't use that as part of the price.
So the next step is creating your marketing documents that really begins with the financials, having recast financials that shows the benefits of ownership, the owner's salary, and any other supportable benefits the owner's taken from the business, health care, retirement funds, automobile, the rental house.
This is some of the discretionary things. So, as a business broker, we're recasting or normalizing for business broker purposes or business valuation purposes if you get business valuation. But basically, you're taking out those one-time fees, owner's benefit,
that are verifiable and supportable. Then the next thing is you need to create what we call a blind market profile. If you go to a lot of the standard business brokerage websites like Business for Sale, Biz Buy Sell, BizQuest, you're going to see that doesn't say who they are or where they're at, but it gives a potential buyer enough information to see if they're interested in the business. You need to talk about some very basic things, what your last full year's revenues were, what the that seller's discretionary with that adjusted earning
or cash flow, as it's called.
Cash flow. You need to discuss how many employees you have, whether full time or part time, what the payroll is for them, and what your lease is like. Do you own the building, or where the business is, or is it available for sale, or what's the lease look like? How much is left on that lease? And then 1-3 paragraphs about business, the strengths, weaknesses, and opportunities, and history of the business being sold. But you just don't want it to be so specific that who the business is. We had a business that was open 46 years, and we said in business over 20. Well, I've been in business over 20. If you said 46, anyone in the area would have known who it was that was for sale.
Yeah, you want to highlight some of the positive attributes of the business, but you don't want to be so descriptive that even someone within your industry will will be able to determine who it is. For example, if just picking an industry, if you're a payroll company, here in our area, there's probably less than 10. You don't want to be too descriptive because then someone in your industry is going to know. And then they're going to use that to your disadvantage when they're marketing against your business.
So. Yeah, look, Joe's up for sale.
Exactly. So you'll put, you know, more of a regional spin on the location.
The next document you're going to put together is after the buyer has signed a confidentiality agreement and demonstrated they have the ability to purchase the business. And we call it a confidential business review. It's also called a deal book or actual memorandum. It's offering memorandum. It's who you are, where you're at, what you do, how long you've been in business. It will include those financials, those recast or normalized financials.
It's going to have pictures of the business.
Yeah, pictures of the business. It's very detailed, and it's that document speaks for the seller. That is the first representation the buyer gets is that document. Some of ours are 2 pages. Some of them are 30 pages. It just depends on the nature of the transaction and what's required.
And the reason it's important, especially for pictures, is, you know, as we've stated before, over 40% of our buyers are from outside the area, and they can't, you know, just drive down the road once they get that summary and take a look at it. So it's important for that.
And all businesses are retail either, they can walk into.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Brick and mortar. And lastly, in creating your marketing documents, these need to be approved by the seller. The owner of the business needs to have the ability to review and approve the financial recast, the market profile, and the deal book or confidential business review. They need to be the editor-in-chief of those documents to go out the front door.
That's very important because as part of our process, we make the seller sign off on each page. And we have to basically sometimes get the seller to kick them a little bit to make sure that they review it, because as a seller of the business, you want to make sure it's accurate.
The next thing is step five, is us developing a marketing strategy. So you've already got your market document, your blind market profile. How are you going to disseminate that information? We published about 15 business brokers' websites. You may want to consider, you know, going to some print media. As an individual, if you're trying to sell your own business, you may want to look at those brokerage websites and understand which ones flood to which other websites. But, you know, there's probably about 5 main business brokerage websites we see activity from out of the 15. But there's other things that are industry specific that you may want to publish to.
If it's a restaurant, there's websites that are dedicated to the restaurant industry, accounting, mm-hmm. insurance, so
dental.
Yeah, exactly. So some of the service type industries, there are websites that specifically market. And depending on your where you're located, the paper may actually be of value from an advertising standpoint of business opportunities or businesses for
sale. Liquor store, bars, and restaurants are typically in automotive repair, typically found there.
Yeah.
The other thing is identifying potential buyers. We do sometimes targeted mailings when we have industry specific, where we're looking at people in other markets, or synergistic fit was pretty pronounced, where we're going to kind of touch directly to owners of other businesses. And I think lastly, in developing a market strategy, is trying to understand the competitors in the marketplace and how to handle it. The owner should convey to the broker, hey, these are people in the marketplace. I don't want to know that the business is for sale for competitive reasons. And that's usually, for a number of reasons, the last person you want to talk to anyway. Someone such as a broker or an attorney or an accountant can contact those people after your initial marketing processes weren't fruitful.
Yeah, or in the seller's case, I'll never sell to that person no matter how much they offer. So
you know, they need to identify the business and the principles of that business to exclude them. And additionally, the owner of the business should identify who they think a good buyer of the business with, based on current industry trends and who they see purchasing and starting a similar business.
Well, in the next segment, we'll begin with step 6, which is contacting prospective buyers, and you're listening to Biz Broker Talk.
from the boardroom to you. Voice America Business Network.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings. While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, they have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit BizBrokerTalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at bbofsa.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at eaofsa.com. Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. This is Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and
Doug Scheiding.
Today we're talking about a typical 10-step process of selling a business, and we're on step number 6, which is contacting prospective buyers. You want to market, the broker should be able to market the new business listing to registered buyers that are within their database. I think our database is around 2,300 active data, you know, buyers, and we've been in business about a little over 10 years. So
classified by industry.
Yeah, classified by industry. Not all 2,300. You'll be looking at any one business. But yes, that's, I'd say it's pretty typical size for a broker. That's one of the things they're going to do in the marketing of the business is they're going to touch people that they already have signed confidentiality agreements and that they have an understanding of what their wherewithal to potentially buy the business. Second thing is we talked about in the prior segment, is publishing this to business brokerage websites whereby you're going to get new buyers, and those buyers need to know that they're going to have to fill out a number of items. One, they're going to have to acknowledge what the broker's doing in the transaction, very similar to real estate, that they represent the seller. The second thing is they're going to need to sign a confidentiality agreement that irreparable harm can come to the business if they were to make disclosure. The third thing would be to provide a summary of their financial standing, because the broker and the seller is going to know how liquid they are, which is going to give an indication of how funding could potentially happen, where they're going to go for lending. And do they even have enough to meet some of just the basic lending standards? They have 20 to 30% liquidity to potentially buy the business.
Or semi-liquidity. And just as in the same way that the seller is going to be providing confidential information about their financial performance of the business, the buyer needs to provide them some financial information about their ability to potentially make an offer or purchase the business.
Not account numbers or even account names, but just a summary balance sheet, you know, just similar to a personal financial statement that you'd give to purchase a car, but not as details you'd provide as to purchasing a home. And you know, you need to be able to arrange an on-site visit with the buyer and the owner. We do these after business hours. We encourage buyers to go by retail locations.
As an anonymous customer, if that's the type of business, if it's let's say an accounting firm or something like that, then
that's not reasonable. That would be a business to either meet in our office or meet with a seller at lunch. But the broker should always be there. And the broker's purpose in those meetings is to take detailed notes, make sure any representations or warranties that were provided by mainly the seller are included in closing documents.
And from the standpoint of that buyer and seller meeting, that's typically where the deal is made or lost.
Rubber meets the road at the buyer-seller meeting. Buyers buy from sellers, and people buy from people. I don't know how more simply to put it. If the seller comes across as coy or sleazy or difficult, the buyer, no matter what that financial statements look like, they're not going to deal with them. And that's an indication of how they've run their business, how they've treated their employees, their vendors, their customers, and what processes the buyer's going to walk into. So the buyer is interviewing the seller, and the seller in this initial meeting needs to be interviewing the buyer, especially if they're going to be potentially carrying a note. So if the seller is going to carry a note for $50,000 or $100,000 or more, they're going to want to know about the character of the buyer and to see if their personality is going to fit in with their business model and their corporate culture. It's a very important meeting on so many levels.
Absolutely, because if you have no idea in that first meeting what type of an offer, if they do make an offer, if they are going to include an earnout, do you think this person is capable? So, and that's the step number 7 is a term sheet or offer purchase or OTP as we call it. So
that is typically what would happen after the buyer-seller meeting is there may be some follow-up action items. The broker or the should be providing a sample offer to purchase to the buyer and following up several days later. If it's owner representing themselves, they should probably follow up with that buyer, 2 to 3 business days later to see if there's any additional questions or issues they can address and ask them what their time frame is about submitting an offer. But that offer can come in many different forms. There's just different levels of formality. In our business environment, we like an offer to purchase that outlines the transaction with a number of contingencies that need to be satisfied in order to move to closing.
The 5 contingencies that are typically standard in ours are basically review and approval of the financials of the business as number 1, getting an acceptable training and transition period.
The non-compete, the seller won't compete against the business owner after the sale, and they won't solicit the employees or customers for a period of time. It usually states a geography in a reasonable period of time.
And then number 4 is the financing to purchase the business. Mm-hmm. If it's an all-cash transaction, as every seller wants, we take that off. And then lastly is, in our process, is the landlord.
And franchisor, if applicable. But a seller doesn't want to introduce a potential buyer to a landlord or franchisor until such time as the buyer can show they have the wherewithal to purchase the business. It does you no good to start those wheels rolling, especially if you're going to end up having to introduce 3 or 4 or 5 buyers to the landlord. They're going to get tired of it.
Yeah, they're going to get agitated. So as part of that contingent offer to purchase, basically you step through and you sign off. Expect the broker to ask the buyer to sign off on the contingencies as you move through it. So once an offer is made, we suggest to the seller that they think about it, even if it's a full price offer, and they need to go back and really maybe shore up some of the training and transition and non-compete right away to make sure that the buyer doesn't think they're going to stay on for 6 months or something like that. It's a charge.
That's correct. And the buyer and their advisors need to be prepared to work with the seller and their advisors, because there's all sorts of things that are going to have to be negotiated, such as the allocation or purchase price between assets and goodwill, training and transition, the non-compete, insurance for the business, the employees' health plans. I mean, there's so many things that have to be handled a lot of times with kid gloves as to not upset one party or the other. But these things you need to work with advisors. And that then brings us into due diligence. Due diligence allows the buyer, once a deal has been made, an offer has been made and accepted, to validate what's been represented. The most simple way to put it is due diligence process is a validation of what's been represented by the seller. So at that point, they're looking at the actual tax returns, the income statements, the balance sheet, bank deposits, payroll statements, usually for the last year, 18 months, sales tax receipts.
W-2, credit card.
Merchant account reports.
But as part of our process, what we'll do is we'll create a due diligence book.
We'll include the lease if there's a franchise involved. At that point, the seller can request a franchise disclosure document known as an FDD and just not open it and hand that directly to the buyer, or the buyer can anonymously inquire about a current franchise disclosure document with that franchisor. But the due diligence period, to me, is the second most important aspect of the transaction behind the buyer-seller meeting.
And basically that's when the seller is really going to have to expend more energy as part of the process as well.
Certainly, this is a time frame where seller gets aggravated because they're getting pinged with requests. We try to get the majority of the things up front, the financials, the lease, the franchise, the bank statements, all those things are typically requested, but there's always additional things that are needed that a lot of times the sellers get irritated with because it's not part of their normal business process. They haven't had to do it in the last 20 years. They ran their business, and they don't a lot of times understand why it's needed. So if a broker's involved in the transaction, their job at this point is to level set expectations and explain why these are needed and why it's important and help facilitate that between the seller and the lender or the accounts or attorneys that may be involved with the buyer. But the most important thing in the due diligence process on the side of the seller is funding. The buyer needs to get a commitment letter or a conditional commitment or something that says that monies will be loaned for the transaction per maybe some additional information that's needed. I'm dealing with right now that it's a franchise and the buyer's not going to continue with the franchise, and so the bank is asking for what the cost structure is going to be for supplies after the transaction when they're no longer a franchise. It sounds very logical, but it's a very time consuming.
Very time consuming. I mean, let's say it's a complete cash transaction. Probably the shortest period of time that due diligence is going to be is 30 days.
Yeah, month to 6 weeks is typical. I'm dealing with one right now that from offer to closing is going to be just at 12 weeks because it's a small business administration loan. 8 to 12 weeks is not uncommon for small business administration loans. We have some capital lenders that will do deals in three to six weeks, but you know, small business administration back loans are 8 to 12 weeks. It's just the process there. And the thing is that you need to know is that sellers need to respond in a timely manner to request. Time kills deals. If you can't produce financials, you can't produce bank statements, you can't produce tax returns in a timely manner, it's going to put suspicion in the eyes of the buyer.
And it's a little bit of a never-ending process. The longer due diligence goes, the more financials the more months are completed and the more financials that are needed to be provided.
Okay, and then the ninth step is documentation preparation. Now, this is where you resolve any remaining contingencies and financing conditions, and this can last a couple of weeks. A buyer has to create a pro forma, sellers needing some additional information from the buyer concerning maybe credit information for if the seller is going to carry a note. I mean, there's all sorts of things that can come up, but the parties need to work together and try to resolve any remaining contingencies. Once that funding has been approved or potentially approved, this is when the seller should be introducing the buyer to the landlord, to the franchisor, but not to the vendors yet. It's not a done deal.
Exactly. I mean, and in a lot of cases, if a customer list is needed, it's probably late in this process of the document preparation.
Yes, and then the broker should be facilitating, coordinating the closing documents and any other related documents, and they can be simple or it can be vast. I mean, it can be the agreement with the merchant account provider. Obviously, you'd have or most deals have a landlord involved. If the owner owns the building, they need to get a real estate attorney or get a standardized lease agreement from a real estate broker to have prepared. It needs to be presented to the buyer.
Or with the landlord, there's always the standby agreement, which no landlord likes to sign.
Yes, the Small Business Administration particularly requires an agreement whereby the landlord abdicates their interest in the assets of the business to second position to the bank.
Exactly.
That's a typical document. But there's a lot of document prep that needs to be handled and done in a diligent manner very quickly. And then the 10th step is closing.
The happy day again.
Yeah, back to where you were in the honeymoon period the day after listing the business. The broker needs to be coordinating the final inspection of facilities, equipment, inventory count. I can't tell you, we're back to the balance sheet. How accurate is that inventory? And is all that equipment represented in the asset list? Is it there? And is it functioning properly? And it's never a good thing when the seller is surprised at the level of inventory. We've had businesses which had almost three times the amount of inventory the seller swore up and down they had when they did a hands-on count.
We've been at a business till 2 and 3 in the morning doing an inventory count. So a lot of times it's basically the appetite of the buyer and really how meticulous they want to be on that inventory count.
And the broker or whoever the advisor is to the seller needs to be working with the buyer and their transition team, because it may be a key employee for the buyer that may be interfacing with them, their accountant on getting their accounting software transferred, getting the payroll, whoever's doing the payroll processing, getting that transferred. There's a lot of time spent that last week before closing, even up to the night of closing and into last minute adjustments to try to resolve any issues. We had one of the deals we had closed this past week. It closed in escrow, meaning we closed on today, the 21st, and the possession is until the 1st of the next month. So therefore, there's a week where the money is being held until it's actually funded. So those are the 10 steps that we typically go through in the sale of a small business transaction. And if you have questions, please email them in or visit us at bizbrokertalk.com. Next week, we will be visiting with Dan Hall. He's a GM of the International Society of Business Appraisers and also the National Equipment Business Brokers International. So he is going to talk to us about equipment and business valuations.
So join us next week, and we look forward to hearing from you. And until then, thank you.
Thank you again for joining us today for Biz Broker Talk. Please join Robert and Doug again next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. After today's show, we hope you are one step closer to a successful sale of your business.